Hello and welcome to Graduate Theory. On today's episode, you'll hear about transdisciplinarity. You'll hear about music and how that can be an unconventional way to add great value in consulting and other fields. You'll hear all about purpose and what it means to be a part of a purpose-driven company. I'm really excited about today's episode and I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to Graduate Theory. My guest today graduated from the University of Technology in Sydney in 2014 with a Bachelor of Sound and Music Design. Since then, he's worked at companies like Commonwealth Bank, Bain, and Accenture. And in 2019, he co-founded his company, Maslow. Maslow is a voice-enabled rehabilitation assistant for young people living with paralysis. It empowers young people to independently manage rehabilitation and is challenging the systematic norms in disability care. Maslow has hundreds of users with disabilities registered across Australia and US therapists remotely managing clients in Australia. For this great work, in 2019, my guest received the Young Social Pioneer of 2019 award by Foundation of Young Australians for making an impact in the disability and accessibility space. Please welcome to the show, Andrew Akiu.
G'day, James.
Welcome to the show, mate. And you're someone that's had a really interesting career story and is doing some really great work in the disability space. But one thing before we dive into all that, I want to ask you about your transition from university into your career and kind of your first few jobs, because you studied music at university and went into consulting, which is really almost an unusual, uncommon transition. So I want to ask, was there a particular moment in that transition that led you from music into consulting?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for that really interesting intro. Hearing you call out some of the maturity points, it's actually just refreshing my memory and I'm just remembering even some of those experiences that I may have slightly forgotten. So that's really interesting. But yeah, to answer your question, the context is that I was studying music at university and really looking at that intersection between music, technology, and culture. I really enjoyed just making technology for music, whether it be for stage, whether it be for production, whether it be for the studio, whether it be to help bands promote and tour. And it was just something that I enjoyed and something that I dabbled in and had a sense of play in. But I remember starting to get towards the end of my university degree and I was maybe in a final semester. And I thought to myself, well, shit, like while I'm a student and while I'm at university, I might as well take advantage of any of the resources that they've got here. So I started just signing up to just whatever was on willy-nilly, problem solving courses, leadership and communication workshops, just anything that I saw on the events calendar that even remotely looked interesting, I just signed up for it. And it got to the point that I was running around the university. I'd just been to the gym. So I was wearing kind of tracky daps and looking really, really scruffy. And I was going to turn up to a workshop that I'd applied for. And I was in the new UTS building, which I didn't really know my way around, the one that looks like a cheese grater now. So they just built it, which shows my age. And I was running around and I saw a sign on the door and it said digital something something. So I thought, oh, this must be the room I'm in. So I opened up the door thinking I was 15 minutes late and I walked in and there's no one else around. So thinking I'm late to this, so it's a little bit strange that there's no one there. But there was one guy at the front wearing a suit and he looked at me and he said, mate, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm here for a workshop and I didn't really know what I was going to. I just signed up for everything. He said, okay, no worries. Tell me a bit about yourself. My name's Andrew. I'm studying music and I build technology. Got chatting and he said, oh yeah, you should sit down and join this workshop. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I signed up for it. But what I noticed was on the table, there were name cards. And of course, mine wasn't there. But I sat down and people started filing in and they were all wearing suits and button-ups and ties. And I'm thinking, I think I might be in the wrong workshop. But they all sit down very quietly looking at me like, what the hell is this guy doing here? And the first, as everybody sits down, the man that facilitated the course, the first thing he asks is, who here did not study commerce or business or engineering or economics? And I put my hand up and he said, what did you study? I said, I studied music. And everybody in the, in that room laugh. But he then went on to say, well, you all know why you're here. And I'm thinking, I don't know why I'm in this workshop. I don't know what's going on. And he said, you're here for the case interview for a strategy consulting, for a strategy consulting role. And I thought to myself, okay, I've just walked into an interview that I didn't apply for, that I didn't get into, that everybody else here had actually gone through a number of other screening interviews to get into that was reasonably competitive. And he said, the format of this interview is we're going to give you a case question and you're going to use the subject matter experts in the room to ask questions, to diagnose, to try and get to the answer, to solve the problem that we're presenting to you. And he said, the problem that we're going to present is a little bit different to what you're used to in an economics degree, a business degree, or an engineering degree, all the typical types of roles, that fields of study that tend to go into consulting. And he said, the case question is, how can we help emerging musicians break above the clutter of the digital market in order to create a sustainable arts industry worldwide? And thinking about this whole group that laughed at me for studying music, I just thought to myself, well, who's laughing now? The context of the interview was we spent 45 minutes interviewing subject matter experts, and at the end, we all had to pitch our solution based on the information that we discovered. And because I'd already been enjoying working in the music industry and really, really enthusiastic about that, and thinking about changes in audio culture and digital streaming services and the things that I just enjoyed, I really thrived in this interview. I enjoyed talking to the subject matter experts. And when it was time to pitch, I thought to myself, look, I'm just going to get this out of the way. I'm feeling really uncomfortable because everyone was laughing at me. I was actually really anxious at the time. I didn't know what was going on. And I pitched a solution, talked about my background in the music industry, and said, all right, cool, I'm going to go now. But as I left, one of the facilitators of the interview chased me down and said, Andrew, I have to introduce you to somebody, and introduced me to the partner of this kind of strategy practice that was heading up the media entertainment vision. And yeah, they invited me to become a strategy consultant with them and help them sell to some of their new music industry clients. So it was all a very, very serendipitous event. And it was very, very much like the first episode of Suits, if you've ever seen that. Couldn't have been wanted. But that's how I accidentally walked into the wrong room and became a consultant.
Wow. That is amazing. That is seriously such a special story. And how things have turned out after that is like getting to where you are, you know, really life-changing almost. And probably
look, one of the biggest things I will say about that is at the time I didn't know what was happening. At the time I didn't know where any of that would lead. And more so, at the time I felt really uncomfortable about all of these people from wearing suits and ties from traditional career paths, like laughing at me because they didn't think that a musician could become a consultant. But on the other side of that, it made sense, and people supported me along the way and embraced those skills. And it was all just about being myself and embracing what I enjoyed doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I see what you mean. What, like your example of when you were speaking about you got laughed at because you were studying music or whatever. I feel like there's definitely a bit of a stigma around some of the arts. People think it's not that traditional kind of career, but certainly in my experience, and you're a great example, there are absolutely people in there that, you know, are doing great things. And that's that kind of stigma that I see. And perhaps, I don't know if you've noticed that as well. Having that diverse skill set and being able to come at problems in a new way is something that is really unique, something that it's great to see that you're an example of that, that you can take that skill set that's not traditional to those consulting kind of roles, and you can still have that positive impact. I think it's really
cool. Definitely. I think just commenting on that, I think that artists are incredibly good at a few things that business innovators are really seeking, and that is, you know, what artists really understand is how to craft together a highly emotive and engaging experience on a very, very minimal budget, and kind of pulling things behind the scenes that might really be scrappy and like just MVP'd essentially, but that on the front, kind of on the front facing side and the audience side is this beautiful curtain performance. And that's that lean MVP approach to, well, especially in entrepreneurship, especially in innovation, especially in that kind of like build, test, break, and kind of iterate type of cycle. Yeah. And artists are fundamentally really, really good at that, leaning into the emotional connections with the audience and achieving that through consumer products. These are the types of mindsets that, you know, business innovators are looking for that artists have had down paths and ventures.
Yeah, I think that is really exciting. One thing I want to talk about now is a transition into the corporate world, into this kind of consulting role. And how did you actually end up in this disability support, you know, this whole disability thing, which you're obviously a startup is in that space. How did you then fall into this?
The great thing about being in a consulting role is you do get to dabble in quite a lot of different industries, and you do get to become a little bit of a subject matter expert or enough of a subject matter expert and then move on to the next thing. I was lucky enough to, you know, work in the media and entertainment industry, of course, but also kind of worked in social enterprise across Southeast Asia. So did strategy and product work for a number of Southeast Asian social enterprises, and then was also lucky enough to work on healthcare systems, major healthcare systems in Australia, designing product and kind of understanding that consumer experience. So I got to pick up this kind of set of skills that, you know, across kind of social impact and then across healthcare and then across that digital music experience. But the actual, to be honest with you, the actual kind of trigger point of what made us say, hey, we should start a business ourselves was through an event that a friend of ours, of my best friend and mine, that was studying at university and training for a triathlon, and he slipped and hit his head and suffered a traumatic brain injury. And it was after that, he spent 9 months in rehab hospital after being paralyzed, losing his memory. And he was surrounded by therapists that were all teaching him about all the things that he would need to do when he got home, pressure care and how to manage support workers and what your exercise physiology is going to look like and how to change a catheter and how to manage your mobility. And it's a lot for somebody to take in if they have, if they've suffered a brain injury and they're paralyzed and they're going through this traumatic experience. So when he was discharged from the rehab hospital home, he and his family forgot a lot of what they learned, which made it really, really challenging to stay on top of all of those therapy programs and manage a team of support workers. And beyond just doing like the minimum care of rehab things that they educated you on, like just to do things that make you human, like go back to university or find a job. There was no time to do any of that because he was spending so much of his time managing his physiological health that it made it so much harder to just enjoy being human. And he was readmitted back to hospital with infections and complications and all of these things that could have been avoided. And my background in kind of product and user experience, combined with my best friend's background as a therapist, actually, and looking at this kind of experience that our friend went through, we really thought to ourselves, there has to be a way to address some of these challenges through technology. And there has to be a way to address the access to information challenges, because that's what technology's always been amazing at, helping people access information. There has to be a way to address these management of a care team kind of challenges, because again, technology's amazing at connecting and coordinating. And there also has to be a way to use technology to help him remotely access things from home, because look at us right now, we've never met each other in person and we're having a conversation online. So that for us was really that spark that made us say, hey, this is worth solving. And we didn't just go and start Maslow like off the back of that. We didn't go, all right, let's create a company. There's a challenge. Let's figure this out. The start of it was actually a kind of a slower testing the waters experience. For an entire year before quitting kind of my job as a consultant, we connected with hundreds of people, young people with spinal cord injuries all across Australia, all the way over in Perth and, you know, Northern Territory and pretty much every city and state. And we spoke to them, and we didn't try and, you know, jam a solution down anyone's kind of put a solution in anyone's face or recommend anything. We just listened, and that's it. And we listened to try and understand whether the experiences of young people with spinal cord and traumatic brain injuries across Australia were similar or different to what our friend experienced. And we listened and co-designed and co-created what they asked for. And there were prevalent themes in all of this. People found it hard to stay on top of their therapy programs from home. They all were frustrated by verbally educating their support workers every single day. And they all said that they wished that they could just have a platform where they could do all of this in the one place and remotely access all of their content, because they were sick of traveling to their clinical appointments for really basic needs. So it was through 2019 that we were immersing and researching and listening, but also prototyping and testing with this group. So the result of that was we built a community already before we'd even launched that knew exactly what they wanted, knew exactly what we were delivering, and that we knew exactly what their kind of setup was. But it wasn't actually until March 2020 that we were forced to try and push something live. And that was because the community that we were co-designing with that already had access issues to healthcare, that already had challenges regulating and managing their support workers and already were looking for digital solutions that their therapists weren't willing to provide, they were all locked out of their clinics because of COVID. And a lot of people may not know this, but you know, people with severe disabilities and paralysis were at the highest risk at that time and were having a lot of the, how do I say this, were probably some of the ones that held the most fear, because it wasn't like you or I where we could think about this and go, okay, this may not affect us that badly. I mean, for somebody living with respiratory issues, they thought about COVID as something that could genuinely have a severe and negative impact on their well-being at a young age. Yeah. So the relationship changed from, hey, we're prototyping this virtual solution with these guys, to them going, hey, that prototype that you guys have been working with us on, well, I could really use it right now because I need remote access to my therapist and I need to be able to regulate my support workers' activities around all the COVID precautions. So yeah, we were forced to push it live in March 2020 and things just, I guess, grew from that.
Yeah, wow. that's another really like fascinating story to go along with your story earlier. I think as well, this another one of those kind of events that's really thrust you into this whole new world and has brought about, you know, great things as well, which I think is really
interesting. Yeah, I think with both of those, though, that I reflect on this a lot. And, you know, I don't want it to sound like there was some golden goose or golden opportunity that was presented with at the time. Because, again, honestly, in both of those scenarios, they didn't make sense at the time. It's only in hindsight that I'm able to say how it all hangs together. Even with Maslow, for example, that first year, 2019, when we went out and did research, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what we were going to build, and we weren't fully sure of what problem we were even solving back then. I can talk about it now because I've gone through the experience and kind of had those learnings. But back then, we were making it up as we were going along and learning to be entrepreneurs. We didn't go, hey, we're going to be startup founders and then immediately possess the skills and capabilities and maturity and expectations. It was just naivety and an intent to do it. But it's actually been the experience since then that, and embracing what we've learned that's enabled us to say, hey, this is why we did it. And this is what we learned and this is what we needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that comes up, I think, through these two is it's one thing to have those opportunities presented or thrust upon you or whatever when you used to describe them. And it's another thing to be able to take that opportunity and act on it and seize that opportunity, which I think is something that you've done.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Well.
Just commenting on that, even before that, it's one thing to even be able to notice those opportunities. In the first example of just luckily turning up to that consulting case interview. Well, I mean, that's not actually the case. I was in a panic mode of my life where I didn't know what I was going to do when I graduated. So I was panickedly signing up for everything that I could possibly sign up for to just turn up and see what happened. And had I not been doing that opportunity, one, wouldn't have presented itself to me. And secondly, had I not been doing that, I wouldn't have possessed the skill set to actually execute on that when I executed on it. And yeah, had I not also possessed the naivety to not leave the class after I realized it was the wrong group, then I wouldn't have been able to hold on to that. So a mixture of luck, naivety, which is actually a great thing, but also of being able to enjoy the discomfort of the opportunity, but also see it when it arises.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's really cool. And it's definitely comes through the initiative.
I do just want to point to another element of that, which like it feels really intangible when people tell you about it, but often people will tell you about it being important and like just laugh if you will, but that's passion. So passion has a really interesting role in creating opportunities, and there's very logical and like non-fluffy kind of like ask in the universe will deliver ways that manifests itself. I'll give you an example. When you're passionate about something, you take it on as part of your identity. And for me, that may have been music and technology or web design or some things that sat around that. And because I've taken that on as my identity, when I meet someone and get into a conversation about what do you do or what do you care about? for me, the conversation tended to steer towards music technology, that kind of thing, and being like, hey, I'm actually really interested in that. And if you meet 100 people and they all remember you as the music technology person, then all of a sudden 100 people are your eyes and ears for opportunities that might make sense for you. And they might meet someone who has an opportunity and they'll remember, oh yeah, that's right, Andrew was the music technology person and I'm going to introduce them to that person. And so there's very tangible ways that manifest itself. And for me, that was when I walked into that room and met a stranger and was scared when I was wearing tracky dacks and looking really scruffy and they were wearing a suit and looking really well curated. And they asked who I was and what I did. The first thing that I said to them was, I'm Andrew and I'm a musician and I also make music technology. Had I not presented that passion, probably would have been booted out of that room.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really cool. It's definitely having that passion and creating that passion is, as you said, can lead to really interesting opportunities. Yeah, in that area. One thing I wanted to ask too is you've had these pretty diverse music consulting area in the disability space. How do you think, you know, having that really sort of generalist almost approach, not that you're a complete generalist, but, you know, having that diverse set of experiences, how do you think that enables you to see problems in a different way and to produce, like you were saying, that artist in you, that you're creating those innovative solutions? Do you think that all combines
together? Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's this kind of like world and thought leadership and concept that people like to describe as like transdisciplinarity. And it sounds really buzzwordy when you just say it out loud. Say transdisciplinarity, you know, or cross-functional collaboration or any variation of that that different industries talk about. And then you got to ask yourself, what actually is that? And I think something that naturally happens with various different industries, skill sets, especially kind of deeper skill sets, whether they be scientific, mathematical, engineering, whether they be whatever they are, is that the deeper someone tends to get in their skill set in kind of conventional fields, the less capable they are at collaborating with people from other skill sets at that same depth. And so you have a lot of these things and these silos being built into industries. And I'll give a really good example of that in the healthcare community. So in healthcare, hospitals hire clinicians. They hire clinicians to run their businesses and run their kind of technology and run their whole practices. They don't hire digital transformation experts. And so the only people designing solutions, especially before COVID in the hospital space, were clinicians. So they're very clinically oriented and that's great, right? But as soon as the world shifted into being, okay, we've got to be completely remote, all of a sudden the healthcare system needed to catch up. And the only people that were able to guide and inform that transition were people that had enough expertise in the clinical space and enough expertise in, say, you know, the digital space or whatever other space to aid with that collaboration and aid with like getting the most out of both worlds. So I guess what I'm saying is, for me personally, touching on a lot of different topics, but, you know, just enough, has enabled me to collaborate with a very, very large scope of people, whether they be artists, whether they be technologists, whether they be clinicians, whether they be designers, whether they be anything, right? And the value of that has been that it's always going to take a number of different skill sets in order to get something new off the ground or in order to create something. And frankly, in terms of that transdisciplinarity conversation, the magical things in this world happen in between disciplines and they happen in between industries. So for me, getting that kind of quite diverse experience, the value of that has been that I can very quickly build a team and work and gel with everyone and get everyone to work and gel with one because I understand enough about the different ways that people work in different industries or in different skill sets to create cohesive collaboration. And you also understand how people think, what they're motivated by, and yeah, how they solve problems. So I guess, yeah, that kind of, So to answer your question, the value of having been an expert generalist or touching on different things or having varied experience that's quite unique has been that the output of that is unique and you can collaborate with a unique set of people and therefore fundamentally create new things.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really cool. And there's, I don't know if you've heard or read about it, but there's this book called Range by, it's got with David Epstein, and it's all about this idea, that whole thing, like specialists and generalists and really who comes out on top almost different scenarios and where do, you know, new discoveries come from and who, like almost in, from a career sense, you know, should you set yourself up as a specialist or as a generalist? And yeah, he found that like what you would, those new creations and new insights often come from those people that are looking from a particular domain across domains rather than someone that's really deep in a single domain. And I think that is, it sounds like something that's what you've found as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, and I think the other part of that is even if you have a diverse experience, like in two completely separate fields, or you do a career change, some people hold this attitude of, if I change careers, I'm losing all of this knowledge that I have that's specialized in a certain field and I'm going into something as the underdog and starting from zero. But other people have this kind of perspective of, if I change careers, I'm bringing in a type of thinking that is completely new to an industry that hasn't experienced that before. And that's actually a competitive advantage and something that you can use as a platform rather than as a hindrance. And so I think that for people that do have varied experience, and not just in the workplace, but like from sport to music to arts to your hobbies to even religion and science and philosophy, if you really think about how you can leverage and use what you already know as a strength to inform something that it may not have been exposed to before and use that analogous experience, then all of a sudden diversity is a superpower rather than a hindrance.
Yeah, I think that's really cool and definitely something that I try and do in my own life, and you know, something that I would absolutely recommend and something that you've experienced too is getting that. Well, it doesn't even have to be that you go and jump careers, or it can be a side hustle that's in an unrelated field that's something that interests me that's unrelated to work, or let's pick up a hobby or whatever it is, just to give you that contrast is cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one thing I want to ask about, which I think is really cool as well, is this idea of a purpose-driven company, and that has really comes through with Maslow, is that we're creating this company. We've gone, like yourself, you've gone from what is traditionally almost a lucrative kind of thing, consulting and a very traditional kind of field, gone into this idea where, okay, we're going to make the world a better place by creating this product and really helping people on a personal level. I want to ask you, how's your experience been like this purpose first approach? Is that something that you would recommend to more people?
Yeah. Just relating that back to something that we spoke about earlier around passion. I didn't know this was going to manifest itself in this conversation as well, but just like your individual passion attracts kind of people and attracts opportunities and that people can get around because it makes sense to them and they can latch onto. It's similar for a really purpose-driven business. When, and again, people talk about it in really fluffy ways, but I'm going to explain how this actually manifests itself in very, very literal and logical ways. So when you run a purpose-driven business, what that actually means is that you as a business leader or employee or anybody or customer or partner are able to come to the table and say, I'm truly passionate about what this solves, how it solves it, and what the outcome and vision is that we are all collectively working together to create. And for Maslow, that happens to be to make it as easy as possible for people with disabilities to manage their care and their rehab at home. That's a fundamental purpose. It's not just my purpose. It's there because it's all of our audience and our community's purpose. It's our employees' purpose. It's our partners' purpose. It's our investors' purpose. And everybody gets around this. And it's been shaped up by everybody as well. I told you about that year that we spent just immersing ourselves with the lives of young people with kind of severe spinal injuries. This is the purpose that they want, and we're just on the journey with them. So the way that manifests itself is that just like when you speak about passion or purpose, the right employees are attracted to you. People want to collaborate on this because they've seen it before. The right investors are attracted to you because they understand how important it is from a purely altruistic standpoint, if not just a profitable standpoint. It makes it easier to make design and strategic decisions because you actually have a centralized point to refer back to. It's not just making a quick buck. And it also keeps your team, your partners, and everybody grounded and in unity, which makes it easier to have tough conversations. Because when it comes to needing to make compromises somewhere, you can always come back to purpose and whether it does or doesn't help achieve this purpose. So, I mean, and that's that kind of war cry or that rallying cry is so much louder and so much stronger than a, I'm not going to name any names here or point it to any particular industries, but, you know, a purely for profit, just a company that doesn't have as tangible an impact on people or doesn't have as tangible a community impact. I mean, yes, every company along the way figures out a rationale about how they make impact, but there are certainly different flavors of that and certainly different degrees of separation of that. And when it's very real and it's very tangible and you can really speak about it and you bring the right people to the table around it, you find motivated people that are truly willing to succeed and help.
Yeah. I think it's really cool. And it's something that I don't know if you've seen how much those sorts of companies, your sort of company, you know, become more common, especially with the younger people. We really trying to get out of the corporate world and want to try and even this whole thing that's going on at the moment, everyone's moving jobs and there's all this talk about the job exits and things like that, because people are struggling to find that meaning in what they do and find that purpose in what they're doing. And so is that something you've seen in these kinds of things? And does that get you
excited? Yeah, I think that does get me excited. So I think it's going to go into a very philosophical discussion here. But one of the things that makes me particularly excited about that is that there are a lot of things in the world that are worth fixing. I think we all know that right now. There are a lot of things that if you look around that are really worth fixing. And what a mass exodus of people that are leaving. Like, not to say that corporate doesn't have purpose, right? Not to say that it fundamentally doesn't have purpose, but a mass exodus of people or a great resignation or whatever you want to call it, of people that are moving over to, I want to tangibly see the grassroots impact of what I'm doing and the change in the consumer market to go, I will make consumer decisions on products because they make a tangible impact to the world, means that there's going to be like an accelerating surgence of like impact driven businesses, whether that be for climate change, whether that be for like social dialogue, whether that be for whatever it is. But as that becomes normal, then, and as consumers start making consumer decisions to support companies like this, then all of a sudden, like the entire ecosystem enables, you know, purpose driven businesses. And we end up with a world where people have a stronger voice. People aren't just in careers because a corporation exists that they can get a reasonable salary from and hopefully buy a house with a pit of fans and all that. Like, companies that exist that can support employees to make an impact on the world, and therefore the world will change rapidly. And therefore we have a better chance of addressing major things that we face as humanity, climate change or misinformation and social divisiveness. And these are all good things and they get me really, really excited. I want to hear about more people stepping into the world of purpose-driven business. And I want to tell people that purpose and profit aren't mutually exclusive. If there's a genuine problem that needs to be solved and you're passionate about it, there's probably going to be thousands, if not millions, of other people that want that solved too, either as collaborators or as customers or as partners or as investors. And if your war cry about that is loud enough, they will hear you and they will come and help you out. So yeah, if anyone wants to take anything away from this, if you're thinking about starting a purpose-driven business and you don't know what to do, like, good, do it, start. Because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what the other side of the fence looked like. Nobody does. But you can only figure that out by actually going through that door and figuring out what's on the other side of the fence. And if it doesn't work out, that's fine. You probably learned a lot from it and you can take those skills elsewhere. You can take those analogous skills elsewhere. But if it does work out, then great. You've done something that's created impact and brought people together. So yeah, to answer your question, yeah, it gets me very excited.
Yeah, that's great. And are there any companies in particular or founders or different people maybe in your network or people you respect? Are there any companies that you look to as a great example of this company?
Yeah, definitely. I think... I'll list off a few. Hopefully I'm allowed to list all of them. But number one, I think in Australia, HireUp. So HireUp is a disability support worker platform for hiring disability support workers. And they've completely shifted the way that people think about hiring disability support workers. And their leadership has been making purpose-driven decisions from the start that have attracted good teams, good funders, good partners, a good value proposition and a good positioning in the market. They've certainly sometimes taken the less profitable decision than but more purposeful decision. And I think it's paid off in the long run. So kudos to Jordan O'Reilly from higher up in the team. I think also some of the surgences of neobanks that focus on impact investment, I think is also a positive as well. Seeing the way that our young people's capital can be put to good in impact investment, where using impact investment as an investment instrument, as opposed to more traditional investments that superannuation funds might be leaning into. So kudos to some of those companies. Neomi, to list probably one of my favorite ones. That's neomi.io. So yeah, I think for me, the ones which are closest to heart, especially in Australia, are the disability tech landscape, which we are part of, and I think the impact lending landscape, which I believe is a way of the future and is another one of those things that should fuel the purpose-driven business.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And this whole space that you're in is something that, you get so excited by it, it's almost infectious because it's like you can just see the good that is coming out of this kind of thing. And it's like anyone can look at it and be like, okay, that is something that I want to be a part of. That is, like you're saying, purpose-driven business. And I'm excited for what the future holds and you're going to go out and achieve. I think it's very, very exciting.
Thanks. Likewise, Jim.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to ask, well, I've got two more questions for you, actually. Is one is about this kind of idea. It's a theme that has come through many of my podcast episodes. It's this idea of self-doubt. And like when you're going, even I'm sure we've discussed some different examples of this already, but you're sitting in the interview, you're not sure what to do, you're really doubting yourself, perhaps. Yeah, and even this whole startup journey, there's plenty of sort of self-development and self-growth that it's come along with it. Have you had any really big examples of doubting yourself? Do you have a kind of process or how have you dealt with that in the past?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's self-doubt or like kind of imposter syndrome or being scared of what's on the other side. These are all things that are definitely going to happen no matter where you are and no matter who you are either. If you take on an endeavor, that feeling is going to come up. It's absolutely inevitable. Your relationship with that feeling is what's really important. And learning to become comfortable navigating the ambiguity and navigating leaning into that unknown or leaning into that space that is uncomfortable is essential. And in terms of overcoming that, like I said, noticing that it's happening, this is probably very, meditation-esque or that kind of line of thinking, but I think it's first and foremost important to know that it's happening. Know when you are feeling experiences of self-doubt and go, okay, that feeling there, that uncomfortable feeling, the thing that's causing me to question myself or whatever, that's just a feeling of fear and self-doubt, and it's going to happen. The second part is finding your cheerleaders and your friends and your people that you trust that can help you build the confidence and challenge the flawed logic that's coming from that self-doubt and really sit with and talk that through with people, because at the end of the day, you probably are good enough. That's why you're even thinking about an opportunity. Now, if you're in a position of doubting yourself, you've been presented with an opportunity. And if you've been presented with that opportunity, you're probably good enough to take it. You may fail. That's also very, very true. That's okay. But if you don't try, then you're never even going to have the option to succeed or fail. So yeah, I guess there's a few little elements in there. And the first being know when it's happening and know that that is just a natural feeling that as a human being means you're leaning into the unknown, that you are good enough because you've been presented with the opportunity. Leverage the people around you that support you and motivate you and get out of your own head and know that, you have no way of knowing what the opportunity could look like if you don't just lean into it, and that feeling is going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's really, really great advice. And it's something that I know you face that, I face that. I haven't met a single person that hasn't faced that kind of feeling. And it's something that you just got to work through and really try and overcome that. And I think it's something that I think has given you as you push through.
Yeah, it does get easier the more you do it though as well. Like you start recognizing the pattern more and more. You start going, okay, this is actually just the feeling, and treating it and changing your relationship with that as you go.
That's really cool. Well, I've got one more question for you, Andrew, and this is a question that I ask all the guests. And that is, from your career where you are now, let's say you were going back, you've just finished university and you're about to start at your first. What advice would you give yourself now after all the experiences that you've had?
I would tell myself that the things that you're thinking about doing, don't just kick the can down the road and keep thinking about doing it. If there's something that you are thinking about doing, just do it. Probably would have started Maslow a couple of years earlier had I wouldn't have been scared, but I should have just made the decision earlier. But this is the case with a lot of things. I think if I can sum it up without kind of pointing to specific experiences, just the thing that you're thinking about, just start it earlier. Because further down the track, when you do reflect on that, you'll think to yourself, you wasted time waiting. And that's okay. That's going to happen. But there's no harm in just starting a new thing if that's what you want to do, because you're either going to start it or you're not. So you might as well start it. The 2 years or the 4 years that the degree is going to take is going to pass anyway. So you might as well do it. Or you're going to progress in your career and kind of go on and get bored anyway. So you might as well start the new thing now. Like, it's all totally okay. So yeah, if you're thinking about doing something, don't wait.
Like, I absolutely agree with that advice. And it's something that even I've experienced starting this podcast. I wanted to start it like a year and a half before I actually did. And I finally got there in the end. But you know, one of the things, well, there's a few things that I think it's, let's just be to what's inside. Trust your gut, I think, quite a bit. Now, that's a theme that's come podcast too, is feeling it's telling you something and you should really go for it. And the thing is around this idea of using death to get yourself to do that. And it sounds kind of morbid and strange or whatever, but it was a bit of a thought exercise for me. And it was kind of like, okay, I have this feeling, I want to do this thing. Oh no, like self-doubt, whatever. But hey, listen, I'm going to be old one day and I'm going to look back on this exact time and act on this feeling. I'm going to be older and I won't
be able to. You're going to die anyway. So like every year that you put off doing something, that's a year you're never going to get back. So just, I mean, don't be hard on yourself if you don't, but just give it that shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's certainly has helped me with a lot of perspective on things, and even like yourself, like getting out there and opportunities and really squeezing the juice out of life, I think is really fantastic, and it's great to see.
Yeah, thanks.
I think we'll wrap up the interview here, and before we head off, I want to give you the opportunity, is where can people go to find out more about what you do and connect with you perhaps, or where would you like to
see? Yeah, if you want to follow the journey of Maslow as a brand on Instagram, we do tell stories of our customers. We do shed a light on this hidden world of people living with disabilities that a lot of the general populace don't necessarily understand or experience. And our goal is to deconstruct that and break the stigma and just normalize that and show that people living with disabilities are just trying to live their life as well, just like anybody else. So you can go to our Instagram at Maslow for People, like that. So Maslow for People, and give us a follow there. If you are a therapist, support worker, somebody living with a disability, a caregiver, or a caregiver of an elderly parent that has support workers, and you can actually go to maslow.io and sign up to use the platform to help better reconnect you, your family, your loved ones to their therapists, their support workers, and everything they need to better manage their care and rehab.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Andrew. Thank you for listening to that episode with Andrew Akib. I think Andrew is a great example of someone that has taken an unconventional degree from university and applied it in so many unique ways, and really being able to create unique insights throughout his career. I think he had great thoughts on what it means to be a part of a purpose-driven company, and something that I see a lot of and something that is really great to be involved with. My three takeaways from this episode were: when we were speaking about transdisciplinarity, and that is something that I am really, really big on, is this idea of becoming a generalist rather than a specialist. I found in books that I've read and things that I've seen, and certainly Andrew's experience again today, was a great example of how often applying skills in unconventional ways can lead to really cool insights and really cool discoveries. The second thing that I picked up from Andrew was this idea of a purpose-driven company, and something that in today's day and age, when you're working for a large organization, sometimes, and not always, but sometimes you can feel disconnected from that purpose. And I think having something like Maslow that Andrew runs that's so close to that purpose, I think is really great. And it feels really good to be a part of something that is a really purpose-first company. The third thing that I picked up from today's episode was this idea of self-doubt and trusting your gut. And that's something that we've spoken about a few times now on the podcast, but it's something that came up again today with Andrew, and something that he said, trusting your gut is really important. That's something that I think we can all pay attention to. So thanks so much for listening today. If you do want to keep in touch, if you want to follow the podcast on a deeper level, if you want to get involved more, please follow all the links in the show notes. They'll take you here, there, and everywhere. If you want to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're on, that'd be great. That way you won't miss an episode. If you want to get really deep, if you want to go to the next level, please go to graduatetheory.com and subscribe to the newsletter. That way you're going to get insights from me. You're going to get reminders, new episodes straight into your inbox. So if you're really keen, please go there, sign up. It'd be great to have you on board as we go and learn about all things to do with careers and career growth. So thanks so much again for listening today, and we'll see you in the next episode.